In our day, we often hear of how science has described the beginnings of all that we see. It is often referred to as the Big Bang, an event that took place, we are told, 14 billion years ago. But that is really only a way to try to have us imagine what took place. It is said that the universe was 9 billion years old before the Earth was formed, which is the basis for the year term. So prior to that, there was time only in the sense of time since the Big Bang. It all gets very complicated, and it seems to desire to come to a point where there's no need for God. If you and I want to believe in God, that's fine, but do not allow it to come into conflict with science, because that would just be ignorant. Now, I mention this because in the early church, there was a different attempt to separate God from the physical universe. It was said and taught, as we have seen previously, that God is too spiritual and holy to have had anything to do with the world as we experience it in all its physical forms and all its textures and smells and sights. Just as the scientific world today often tries to keep God out of any interference, so-called, with what we see and experience, so too did the early Gnostic heretics. This faith was a constant threat to the church for its first 300 years. In fact, it has been around for most of the life of the church, always trying to get us to believe that God would not want anything to do with this physical world as we see it. Novatian was a teacher in the church in the mid-200s. He was an able teacher who had a significant effect on those who listened to him. If we follow his life story, we discover that he fell out of favor with the church over his insistence that those who had fallen away during the difficult persecutions could not be reconciled to the church again. They had sinned too grievously to be readmitted after the danger had passed. In the course of his life, he formed a church in opposition to the Roman church, which lasted for centuries. Our interest in him is to hear his thoughts on the beginning of the rule of faith, or rule of truth, as he calls it. I'm going to be reading the beginning of his treatise on the Trinity, which was held to be one of the more profound teachings on the subject. He begins this way. The rule of truth requires that we should, first of all, things believe in God the Father and Lord Omnipotent, that is, the absolutely perfect founder of all things, who has suspended the heavens in lofty sublimity, has established the earth with its lower mass, has diffused the seas with their fluid moisture, and has distributed all these things, both adorned and supplied with their appropriate and fitting instruments. For in the solid vault of heaven he has awakened the light-bringing sunrisings. He has filled up the white globe of the moon and its monthly waxings as a solace for the night. He, moreover, kindles the starry rays with the varied splendors of glistening light, and he has willed that all these things in their legitimate tracks to circle the entire compass of the world so as to cause days, months, years, signs and seasons, and benefits of other kind for the human race. Here, Novatian has just made a significant point, which we do well to remember ourselves. God created the world and all we see in it for the benefit of the human race. God's original intent was for us to live in great harmony with creation. But we, as humans, have fallen into sin, and as a result, we live in constant conflict with our world. We no longer know how to properly care for it, and we abuse it, and we abuse each other as we spoil what God originally made for our benefit. Novatian goes on as follows. On the earth, moreover, he has lifted up the loftiest mountains to a peak. He has thrown down valleys into the depths. He has smoothly leveled the plains. He has ordained the animal herds usefully for the various services of men. He has also established the oak trees of the woods for the future benefit of human uses. He has developed the harvests into food. He has unlocked the mouths of the springs and has poured them into the flowing rivers. And after these things, lest he should not also provide for the very delights of the eyes, he has clothed all things with the various colors of the flowers for the pleasure of the beholders. Novation sees the creation as a way for us to have a sense of the wonder of God. God has carefully developed the world for humanity, and He's made it all so beautiful to see. He goes on. Even in the sea itself, moreover, although it was in itself marvelous both for its extent and its utility, He has made manifold creatures, sometimes of moderate, sometimes of vast bodily size, testifying to the variety of His appointment to the intelligence of the artificer. And not content with these things, lest perchance the roaring and rushing waters should seize upon a foreign element at the expense of its human possessor, He has enclosed its limits with shores. So when the raving billow and the foaming water should come from its deep bosom, it should return again unto itself, and not transgress its concealed bounds, but keep its prescribed laws, so that man might the rather be careful to observe the divine laws, even as the elements themselves observed them. Do you notice Novation is saying that when we as human beings take careful note of how the seas obey the laws which God has set in place for them, that we should also take very careful note of what laws God has put in place for us. And he goes on. And after these things, He also placed man at the head of the world, made in the image of God, to whom He imparted mind and reason and foresight, that he might imitate God. And although the first elements of his body were earthly, yet the substance was inspired by a heavenly and divine breathing. And when he had given him all things for his service, he willed that he alone should be free, and lest again an unbounded freedom should fall into peril, he laid down a command in which man was taught that there was no evil in the fruit of the tree. But he was forewarned that evil would arise if perchance he should exercise his free will in the contempt of the law that was given. For on the one hand, it had behooved him to be free, lest the image of God should unfittingly be in bondage. And on the other, the law was to be added so that an unbridled liberty might not break forth even to the contempt of the giver, so that he might receive as a consequence both worthy rewards and a deserved punishment, having in his own power that which he might choose to do, by the tendency of his mind in either direction, whence therefore by envy mortality comes back upon him. Seeing that, although he might escape it by obedience, he rushes into it by hurrying to be God under the influence of perverse counsel. Here, Novation is giving us his theology of the fall. Mankind has been created to be free, but free in such a way that unbridled freedom would lead to an excess which would be an affront to God. We were given a command to keep us in from that excess. But, Novation says, mankind simply rushed headlong into a desire to be as God. He continues in his discussion. Still, nevertheless, God indulgently tempered his punishment by cursing not so much the man as his labors upon earth. And moreover, what is required does not come without man's knowledge, but he shows forth man's hope of future discovery and salvation in Christ. And that he is prevented from touching of the wood of the tree of life is not caused by the malignant poison of envy, but lest, living forever without Christ's previous pardon of his sins, he should always bear about with him for his punishment an immortality of guilt. Novation gives his readers an idea as to why it was necessary to send Adam and Eve out of the garden. God had to protect his creature from an immortal guilt. Now it can be dealt with in Christ Jesus. But had there been a living forever with guilt, it would have been too much to bear. Novation continues. Nevertheless also, in higher regions, that is, above even the firmament itself, regions which are not now discernible by our eyes, he previously ordained angels. He arranged spiritual powers. He put in command thrones and powers and founded many other infinite spaces of heavens and unbounded works of his mystery, so that this world, immense as it is, might almost appear rather as the latest instead of the only work of physical things. And truly, what lies beneath the earth is not itself void of distributed and arranged powers. For there is a place where the souls of the just and the unjust are taken, conscious of the anticipated dooms of fixture judgment, so that we might behold the overflowing greatness of God's works in all directions, not shut up within the bosom of this world, however ample, as we have said, but might also be able to conceive of them beneath both the abysses and the depths of the world itself. And thus, considering the greatness of the works, we should worthily admire the artifice of such a structure. That's just the first section of Novatian's work on the Trinity. It gives us a sense of his method of theological discourse and his insistence on the intimate connections between God and this creation. In so doing, he was confronting the Gnostics who, as we have previously seen, denied that God would have anything to do with this physical world.